take a seat this morning. Obviously, as you know, we've had some, you know, water issues this morning. I had somebody who will remain unnamed that came up to me and said, you know what we should do during worship? We should just open the doors because you blow enough hot air, we'll probably dry this place up in no time. And Claude, I just want to tell you, there's no room for that in this church. Let me just tell you. Now, I'm glad you guys are here, and thank you for being a part of the service. I'll try not to blow too much hot air today. I'll try to at least keep it brief, if nothing else. So glad that you guys are here. Hope you have a wonderful day and weekend with your families and just enjoy yourselves. We're talking about the series called The Church in Ephesus, but we've kind of rebranded it as a word for our church today, here and now. Because the Bible still speaks with power and in immense ways, and we've just got to learn how to see it. I want to tell you a story. There's a guy that I've known probably about 15 years, a nice guy, and about 5 or 6 years ago, he went to the doctor and had some, you know, things going on in his life, and he found out that he had cancer. And that's probably not a great diagnosis when you're sitting in that room. Some of you in this room have been in the doctor's office when they share that news with you. And immediately you can tell by that tone or that moment how things are going to go. Is this one of those that we've caught it early and it's great and it's very treatable? Or is this one of those that says what we really are going to do is try to do everything we can to prolong your life as much as possible? From what I understand, this is the category that he was in. It was located in his liver, and so they started this treatment plan of chemo or radiation or whatever it was. And it was really more of a plan to say, we need to try to extend your life as much as possible. And for those of you that have experienced this or have had a family member that experienced this, there's that moment where you say, okay, what's going to happen? And I've got to go back and need to make sure that my will is in order, and I need to make sure that my family is taken care of. And I remember hearing they were discussing, you know, do we sell the house? Do we downsize? What do we need to do to get ready for this? Went through treatments and was quite responsive, but because he had some other ailments that had affected his body as well, the treatment wasn't quite as successful as it could have been. And so what happened was the conversation at some point became, your best chance of survival from this is to get a transplant, to get on the transplant list, to get a liver transplant. And it was more of a waiting game, and some of you know this experience or have had this experience before. And you're waiting, and am I going to live long enough to have, you know, to do this or to go through this? And what happened was he was, you know, quite far down the list, and then he was suddenly fifth on the list, and then there was a liver available, and somehow, through some probably miraculous moment, the other four, for some reason, it was not going to work, and he was suddenly at the top of the list. And about 5 years ago, he went to the hospital and received this new liver and had a successful transplant. And guess what? It wasn't just that it helped eradicate the cancer in his life, but the other ailments that he had in his body, a lot of them, you know, that were affected or, you know, affected by his liver, were now gone. And he got to meet his first granddaughter. And he's still living today because he was given new life. He wasn't just given better life. He wasn't just kept alive. It's crazy because the thing that seemed to be the worst in his life actually turned out to be the best. That's probably the best story that I can think of about what it means to be given a new life. All of us have moments where we realize something is better and we take things for granted, but he has this tangible moment that he was given new life. And I think that is what Paul wants the Ephesian church and ultimately our church to see when we read chapter 2, verse 1 to 10. So what I want to do is, because I want us to sort of have this imagery in the back of our minds as we read Ephesians chapter 2, the first 10 verses. It says this, Paul's writing to this church. He says, as for you, all of us, you were dead in your transgressions and sins in which you used to live when you followed the ways of the world and the ruler of the kingdom of the air, talking about Satan and his schemes. the Spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient. All of us, Paul's including himself in that, all of us used to live among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of our flesh and following its desires and thoughts. Like the rest, we were by nature deserving of wrath. Every one of us has been selfish about the way that we have lived, and we have been disobedient. And because we have been disobedient, we rightly deserve the wrath of God. But verse 4, he says, but. A great word. But. Because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ, even though we were dead in transgression. It is by grace that we have been saved. And God raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus, a place we don't deserve to be, and he's put us there in order that in the coming ages he might show the incomparable riches of his grace expressed in his kindness to us in Christ Jesus. For it is by grace that you have been saved through faith. And it is not of yourselves, it is God's gift to us, not by works that anybody can boast. For we are God's handiwork, or we are God's creation, created in Christ to do good works, which God had prepared in advance for us to do. He starts off by saying, we were dead. We were dead in sin and transgression. Sin being kind of this place that befalls humanity, this brokenness that every single person has. And transgressions meaning to make bad choices, to go against the Spirit of God and the thread of goodness. It says we were all dead. We were kind of existing. We were sort of these spiritual zombies when it came to God. We were dead in our transgressions. And it says, and God has given us new life. It's like the creation story that we see in Genesis chapter 2. God makes Adam and Eve, and he makes Adam out of the clay, and he breathes his life into this creation. It's the same idea. You know, it's interesting when Paul writes about who we are in Christ, he doesn't say we are a renovated creation. He says we are a new creation. And you can see kind of the threads and the origins of what Paul is going to say later about being a new creation, because he is sharing with them and saying, we were dead. We didn't even know we were dead. We were sitting in the doctor's office, and the doctor said, there's no hope. There's nothing that can be done for you. And God is the one who comes down and gives us new life and heals all these past ailments as well. And we walk out of there as new people because we have been given new life. And he says the only way this happens is by the grace of God. The only way this takes place is it's not because of us, it's because of God. This gift that grows out of his love. It says God looks at his children, and this gift of grace grows from that place like a parent to a child that says, I will do anything for you. I will go the extra mile. I will do whatever it takes so that you can find life. And Paul reminds us. He said, it's not by ourselves. It's not by our works. It's not by how good you are. It's not about how sorry you are. It's not about how much you can do to be right with God. It is all because of God's gift from his overwhelming love, and it is by grace. It is only by grace that we receive the goodness of God in new life. And when we start to live out God's great story of love, it's not because we want to get grace. It's because we already have it. You know, do you ever walk around the house and you're looking for like your sunglasses and they're on your head the whole time? You ever do that? That's kind of what Paul's saying. It's not about you finding something. It's something that you already have. And everything that we do in our lives grows from that place. Not because we're trying to get it, but because we already have it. I think sometimes we need to be reminded of that. I know I do. It's so easy for us to think, well, what can I do to be good enough so that God will continue to, that I'll continue to walk in his favor and I'll continue to be what he wants me to be? Paul says nothing. Be a person of faith. Accept it with both hands. That's how God's grace works. That's actually kind of overwhelming and sort of anticlimactic because we already have it. That God's grace really inspires us to live as the people we need to live. It's not a check system. His grace inspires us to do good works. It inspires us to be the people that God is calling us to be. Not so that we can check a list and say, okay, God, I did 8 of these things this week. How much grace do I get? God says, if you had done 2, you'd still have gotten my grace. But because you have it, how are you going to alter the way that you live? There's a story that Paul also tells in 2 Corinthians where he is struggling with God because he is facing some obstacle that he's not really able to allow the gospel to break forth in these new areas. And he has all this desire to push the gospel forward and to go to these places that he needs to go. And he just keeps asking God to let him to do that. And God responds in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 9. And he said, Paul says, but God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in your weakness. That's what he shares with Paul. And he says to him, everything that happens in your life is not because of you. It is ultimately because of me. And when you learn to lean into me and accept what I have and be filled with it, it's going to change the way that you live. And the anthem of Ephesians chapter 2 is so simple, and yet we sometimes miss it. It says, his grace is enough. God's grace is enough for us. Why are we so resistant to accept it? Well, because we're people. And because we're fighting this battle between the world and our faith constantly. And God is calling us to new life. And yet we so easily slip back into sin and transgression because it fulfills the flesh, as he says in the beginning of chapter 2. It's because we want to do those things. And God, in his infinite mercy and grace and love for us, reaches down and pulls us out and says, don't you get it? You already have my attention. You already have all my blessings. And I'm not going to take that away from you. I just want you to do your best to live towards that as much as you can. His grace is enough. He has given us new life. We are always the obstacles. It's never God. You ever notice that? It's never God that's not there. It's us. And Paul is reminding this church and saying, you already have God's grace. So live towards that. Every week we have a time for people to respond. I think the words speak for themselves today. They speak about a reminder that God's grace is immense and wonderful. That you don't have to be good enough to start a personal relationship with Jesus. That you are good enough already, not because you're good, but because he is. And you can live it out. You can prioritize your life. You can change the way that you do things. And we live today because we are people that have grace, not people that are. And all the glory because of that goes to God because of his infinite and wonderful love for us. I hope you hear the word of the Lord this morning. Father, today, thank you for just reminding us about what's important. God, we're the ones that get distracted. We're the ones that get led astray. We follow our own vices. But Father, I just pray that in this moment today that we would just be reminded of the simple fact that you love us, that you love us where we are and how we are. Even though we are going to struggle with sin and transgression our whole lives, God, we know that that is not the way that you decide whether we get grace or not. You decide to give us grace because we are your children and because you love us. And God, may we just be reminded of that fact today, that we are loved by you, that you are our Father, that you are our parent, that we are your children. May we rest in that today. God, we know that your grace is enough, even though sometimes we forget that on a daily basis. And so today I just pray that you would remind us of that, because you are great, because you are wonderful. And may we step towards that this morning. God, as we stand, as we sing together, as we proclaim your name, may you be in our midst. We ask this all through Jesus.
You guys stand. This isn't going to be.